I hear a voice outside the bedroom door. It says, "No, Emily, she can't be dead. The Lord gave me his promise, eternal life for all who believe in me." Then there's another voice. It says, "Octavia, have faith and remember that our Lord Jesus was resurrected after 3 days." It says, "Perhaps the Lord is planning another miracle." It says, "We need to keep her body warm so she can rise again." The visitor. I am sitting up. The curtains are open. Grace came to me. She helped me out of Ellen's bed and back into the chair. Then she wrapped me in a blanket. She tucked Ellen in with extra layers too and slipped a hot water bottle beneath her covers. There is one by her feet. That was my idea. She hates having cold feet. I'm still holding Ellen's hand. I squeeze it to tell her everything will be all right, but there's nothing in return. All the tenderness is gone from her fingertips, and all the warmth. There are purple bruises on her translucent skin. When Octavia came, she said it was time for someone else to take a turn to sit by the bed. Emily tried to drag me away. She prized my fingers from Ellen's hand, but when I let go, her arm didn't fall back to the bed. It stayed just as it was. It was reaching out to me. "You see," I said, "I can't leave her. She wants me to stay." "I think I'll brush her hair. Soon the angels will come and she'll want to look her best for that." I see their light flooding in, rays falling across the bed. "I told Grace I'd go," I whisper. "I said I'd leave. But Ellen, when you come back, when God sends you back, I'll stay in this society. I will believe." The hands of the clock are stopped at 3:10. Time has stood still. But at intervals, Betty appears. She brings tea and toast. They stand on the side untouched. Sandwiches, soup, cake. Ellen opens her eyes and says, "Dillis, you have to eat. Keep your strength up for when I come back." I know she's right, but I just can't face it. There are pillows behind me and more blankets. And my clothes are different, though I can't remember changing them. I say, "Ellen, you must be thirsty." I take a square of linen from her bedside table and put it into the glass. Then I put the glass to her lips. They are black now. "There, take the water. It will revive you," I say. But she won't. I tip a little into her mouth, but it pools behind her teeth, then seeps out down her chin. They are coming for her. The angels are coming. I thought they would fly in through the window, but I hear them on the stairs now. An army of angels on the landing. I wonder if they will take me too. If I ask them. Nicely. They file into the room in line. No wings. No halos. No white robes. These are angels clothed in black. A heavenly host in mourning weeds. Long skirts, high-necked jackets. There's a flash of white handkerchief as they dab the grief from their faces. But most just look frightened. A look in their downturned eyes that gives them away. She said we wouldn't die. If it could happen to her, then it could happen to me. There is an awkward shuffling by the door as those trying to leave the room squeeze past those who have yet to come in. "We have not gathered to mourn," Octavia says. "We are here to give praise, for Ellen shall be resurrected. Soon she shall return from heaven with news from the Lord." The angels say amen. Then I am alone with Ellen once more. Night comes. Lamps are lit. And I watch the heavenly light creep round the edges of the curtains again. There are roses placed in vases around the room, and someone has put a posy of lavender in my hand. It must have been Grace. She is standing beside Ellen's bed with a man I have never seen before. "Have you come to take her to heaven?" I ask them. "No, Dillis, this is Dr. Williams," Grace says.
Miss Baltrop, I haven't seen you for very many years, the man says. Do you know me?
I don't.
I used to treat your family when you were a child.
Perhaps he is right, but I don't remember. He has come to make Ellen better.
No, Dillis. He needs to sign her death certificate, Grace says.
But she won't be dead for much longer.
Octavia said so. She said Ellen will rise after 3 days.
It has been 4 days, Dillis. Grace turns to the man I don't recognize.
Doctor, she has been sitting here all this time. You understand my concern?
He nods.
I will leave you to it, she says. I'll make sure you are not disturbed.
The man puts on his glasses and uses a handkerchief from his pocket to cover his mouth and nose.
He leans in to inspect Ellen's body.
I could tell him that she is coming back. I could try to make him understand. But he won't. He is a man of science, so married to the religion of rationality that he cannot see the truth.
That's what Octavia would say.
He takes a notebook out of his brown Gladstone bag and starts to make notes.
The date. It's gone clear out of my mind. Do you happen to know it, Miss Baltrop?
He lifts his pen and looks at me for an answer. But I have no idea.
Do you know what day it is?
I don't.
Or the time?
I shake my head. The clock has stopped at 3:10. He returns to his notebook, glancing at Ellen occasionally while he makes his notes.
You have been here for 4 days, he says gently, screwing the top onto his pen and looking at me.
It squeaks as he turns it.
She is gone, Miss Baltrop. I am a doctor, do you understand? Ellen is dead.
I can't bear the squeaking sound. Now he is tapping his pen on the edge of his notebook. What has he written in there? Has he made a note of my sins to report them to Octavia?
Miss Baltrop, do you understand? Ellen is dead. She is not coming back. Whatever you may have been told, arrangements are being made for her funeral.
The truth rips through my body, tearing out the flesh inside my chest and leaving only my heart behind. It knocks against my bare ribs, bruising with every beat. They're going to bury her in the ground. She is gone. She is not coming back.
She killed her,
I say.
I beg your pardon, Miss Baltrop.
Emily killed her, he says.
I see.
But I can tell he doesn't see it at all. I can tell by the way he is looking at me that he thinks it was me. It was my sin. I was going to run away. I was going to leave. He thinks that's why the Lord took Ellen. He thinks that's why she is never coming back. But he is wrong. It wasn't my fault.
Miss Baltrop, when was the last time you ate anything? He says. Have you managed to get any sleep?
I don't know the answers to his questions, but he keeps asking them anyway.
If you would allow me to give you some medicine, he says, to calm your nerves.
He takes a sachet of powder from his bag and dissolves it in a glass of water. It is the one I put to Ellen's dead mouth, but I don't tell him that. It tastes bitter when I drink.
That will help you to get some rest, he says.
He is on one side of me, and suddenly Grace is on the other. They are helping me to my feet.
I will write my recommendations, he says to her.
Thank you, doctor, she says. You'll send it to the address I gave you. And as we agreed, no mention of this to Mrs. Baltrop or Mrs. Goodwin. I'm on the landing. Then the stairs. Grace is holding my arm. I am being held. The man is gone now and it is just us. Together. We're in the garden, on the lawn. There's the seat where you and I sat, Grace, when you first came to me. She says, I remember. She says, we don't have much longer before the truth comes out. I have found out, Dillis. I have found out what's been going on. She says, I need you to understand. But I don't.
I don't understand what she is saying or how I got to be here on the edge of my bed. She is kneeling down and taking off my shoes. She is talking about Emily and a letter and Adrian, and I want her to slow down and tell me again because I can't make sense of it. She says, I'm sorry, I should have told you. But told me what? I am under the covers and my clothes are gone. I am wearing a nightdress. She is stroking my hair. She says, I have hidden it in your Bible, Dillis. Read it when you wake up. She says it's not too late. The Judgment. I see him at the window, staring in. Those eyes of black glass that never blink. Sometimes he wakes me with a tap of his beak on the pane, because Sir Jack wants me to know he is watching. He wants me to see him shake his feathers and take flight. He is going to find Emily and report back. No one has been to see me, not even Grace. I saw her walking with Emily across the lawn, through the wet leaves that have fallen from Yggdrasil. I knocked on my window, but they didn't look up. No one comes when I shout through my bedroom door, either. It is locked, just like it is in my dreams. I don't think they have bricked me in, not yet. I can still see through the keyhole, but perhaps that is next. I have to get out before that happens. I'm not suited to a life of contemplation. There is too much I don't want to think about. My only escape now is sleep, but it won't take me, won't snatch me away. My body starts to float, but my head won't follow. It is tethered to the bed. Dreams come while I am still awake, delights and horrors unfolding here in my room, so even then I can't leave these four walls. I'm trapped between wakefulness and slumber. I can hear a dream approaching. Footsteps along the landing. The sound of a key in the door. Perhaps this time my imagination will take me away. Take me somewhere else. Perhaps Ellen will come and find me. Dillis, it is time to get up and get dressed. This has gone on long enough. Mother, you need to come to chapel. Octavia is opening my wardrobe and taking out clothes. Put these on. But I can't move. I've forgotten how. My door is open, but I don't think I can leave this room. Where's Ellen? I ask. But Octavia says nothing. She lays a dress out at the foot of my bed. It is taupe, or camel. I can't remember which. Come on, Dillis, you need to get up. Has she woken yet? She turns away and opens the drawers where I keep my stockings. Dillis, Ellen has gone to be with the Lord. We buried her last week. She says it as if I should know, as if I have just forgotten, as if it is a minor detail. And suddenly I remember. I was lying beside her, trying to keep her warm. She was as cold and hard as stone. And then a man came. Ellen's dead, whatever you may have been told. She won't be coming back. Last week, I say, but it doesn't make sense. How long have I been in here for? I should have been there for her funeral. Don't get agitated, Octavia says. You have had a fever. You were quite delirious. I think you must have caught a chill in all that rain in London. But you must get better. I need you to. It reaches a point where you have to question whether you are being rather self-indulgent. So Ellen didn't. She wasn't resurrected. You were wrong, Octavia. That is what I want to say. You were wrong. Dillis, please, she says, pulling back my covers. We need to get to chapel. The Divine Mother has insisted that all resident members must be present. You mean Emily has insisted? For goodness sake! She raises her hand so suddenly that for a moment I think she means to strike me. But she brings the palm up to her own forehead. Only the Lord knows what I would have done without her to guide me this past week. While you have been up here, sleeping, it's all been too much. Her voice snags on the sharp edge of an emotion lying just beneath the surface. Emily is the only one who understands my torment, who understands what needs to be done. I'm not coming to chapel, I say, and the thrill of rebellion runs through me. You will come! She grabs my arm and pulls me up, jerking my body out of bed before my mind has the chance to follow. I need to lie down again. I start to slump back, but she won't let me. She holds onto me, her grip pinning my arms down to my sides, digging her fingers into my flesh. I have to obey the Lord in everything, though I suffer for it, she shouts. I have to follow his will, and you will follow mine. Stand there! Then all I see is white linen. My arms are up and my nightdress is being lifted, exposing my body. Grace, I whisper, we mustn't. But this time I don't mean it. I feel the tug of my hair as she brings it over my head, impatient and rough. A few strands must have caught in one of the buttons on the collar, and I'm tangled up in the fabric. Yes, Grace, I trust you. Yes, Grace, I will leave. But when the nightdress is gone, it isn't Grace I see, it is Octavia. And she can see my body. All of it. A body she hasn't seen since I was a child, now transformed by curves and hair. Too fluid, too fleshy, unwieldy and greedy and vague. She tries to look away, but I see the disgust on her face, and the jealousy. She is looking at the figure she once had. I didn't realize, she said, her voice suddenly softer. You have got so thin, Dillis. I grab the blouse and cover myself, cover my shame. Octavia looks away and turns to face the corner of the room, and I slip on the underwear she has laid out and the dress. Sitting down, I slide the stockings on my feet, up my legs. Where is Grace? I remember walking with her across the lawn. She was trying to tell me something. I'll have to find a way to ask her. Perhaps I'll get a chance in chapel. She will tell me what has been happening. How long I've been lost in here. Now do your hair, Octavia says, turning back to me. I'll return in 5 minutes to take you down. 5 minutes, Dillis. I look up, but she was already walking out of the door. Octavia, I dreamt I was locked in, that I couldn't get out. She doesn't stop or look back. We were keeping you safe, she says. You have been sleepwalking again. You could have fallen on the stairs. She closes the door behind her, and I hear the key turning in the lock. It is standing room only. It looks as though every one of the resident members has accepted the call. But there is no sign of Grace in the chapel. Not yet. I'd be able to see her auburn hair, but all I see are smudges of brown and grey, indistinct ladies of indeterminate age. I'll stay here in the back corner, close to the side wall, so I have something solid to lean against. There are too many people crammed in, too much opportunity for accidental contact, the knocking of an elbow or the brush of a hand. I don't want anyone to touch me or speak to me. I don't want anyone to see me either, but perhaps they can't. Voices are distant, faces are blurred. Perhaps I am not really here, trapped between wakefulness and slumber. The murmur of voices dies down and Octavia and Emily stand at the altar. Panaceans, thank you for coming. There is much news to share with you this evening, Emily says. Before we begin, I should like us to remember Ellen Oliver, who is continuing her devoted work for the Society in the realms of heaven. As you all know, says Octavia, we had hoped that she would be resurrected. We prayed for the Lord to perform a miracle. Her voice sounds thin and uncertain. But we must all understand that our prayers were selfish. We asked the Lord to let her return to us because that is what we wanted. She looks to Emily, who immediately steps forward to speak. What is important is what God wants, she says. He spoke through the Divine Mother to confirm that Ellen has been called ahead to heaven, and when Christ returns to earth, she will be by his side. The silence in the chapel is absolute. No one shuffles in their seats. No one scratches their hair or picks their fingernails. No one draws attention to themselves at all. Octavia might take it as a sign that they have something to say. When Ellen returns, she will be of radiant body, she says, addressing the question we dare not ask. Now she has passed into the realm of heaven. She has no need of flesh and blood. The air is thick with unspoken doubt, like the heady smoke of incense. Emily steps forward again. And in releasing her from her mortal body, the Lord is making a new covenant with us, another promise that we are his chosen people. She raises her arms as though she is standing on a soapbox or at the foot of Mount Sinai. Firstly, he took Ellen on the very night that some of us went to witness Mr. Price's blasphemy. Though men refuse to see the truth, the Lord knows that we keep faith. He knows that we will see the real box opened. She pauses and raises her eyes to heaven. Secondly, he took her on the 8th of the month, after 8 weeks of illness, which surely points to the name Octavia. And thirdly, this time she brings her hand to her chest. On the very night she left us, a picture of a caged bird at Mrs. Whittington's fell off the wall, a clear sign that dear Ellen has been freed from this world of sin. It should be a comfort to us all, Octavia says. Blessed Ellen. She is the first of us to look upon the face of Christ. I imagine she will be telling him all about us as we speak. She smiles, her upturned lips twitching with the threat of tears. We thank God for Ellen's life of integrity and uprightness, which has been equal to that of Job, she says. We recognize her to be a link between us and the incorruptible fold, and we bid her adieu until we see her again. There's a stifled sob from somewhere at the back of the chapel, and a number of women bow their heads in silent prayer. In the meantime, Octavia says, we shall keep everything ready for her return. Ellen's house shall be sealed up so that when she comes back to us, she'll find everything just as she left it. All her clothes in her wardrobe, her favourite chair still sitting by the fire. She'll feel like she has never been away. Her servant Betty will make weekly visits to Ellen's house to keep everything clean, Emily says. But day to day she will be looking after Octavia and those of us who live at number 12. Emily's eyes scan the faces of the congregation, then stop abruptly when they find mine. She is moving back in with us. She gives me a smile, but I don't know what it means. Betty can't come to live with us, there's no room. Grace lives with us now. Where is Grace? I look around the chapel again, but I can't see her. Why isn't she here? All resident members have been called to the meeting tonight. I want to shout her name until the congregation parts and I see her standing among them. But she isn't here. Memories come back to me of her arm in mine. We walked across the lawn. She was trying to tell me something, but what did she say? The Lord has made a new covenant and we keep our side of the accord, Octavia says. The time has come to cleanse the garden of all evil, to cleanse ourselves of the spirits that lead us to sin. Day after day I am forced to sit and listen to your confessions, your jealousies and petty quarrels. There are those of you too prone to take offence, those too needy for my attention, those who like to sow the seed of discord. Well, now it stops. I can live like this no more. Octavia steadies herself on Emily's arm and nods for her to continue. We shall begin the casting of controls, says Emily. For this act, members shall be required to hand in to me a list of their inhibitions, peculiarities, annoyances and temptations. They shall then be called before Octavia and the Divine Mother, who will perform a banishment of the spirits that control them. Those who refuse to cast out the demons will be cast out themselves. Indeed, I must inform you all that for that very reason, Grace Hardwick who came to us to help with domestic chores, is no longer a member of our society. She has moved on. I hope you will all join me in praying that she finds her way back to the righteous path. She looks at me again, though I fear she may have strayed too far. Gone. Grace is gone. She can't be, she wouldn't leave me. But what if she has? What if she's gone and it is too late for me? She may have strayed too far. Did Emily find out what she was planning? Did she find out about us? I need to find her. I need to find Grace and ask her what is happening. I try to move towards the door, but there is no room. No one is moving to let me through. I have to get out. I can't breathe. I push my way through the bodies in front of me and fight my way to the door. All shall be called to confess their secrets, Octavia says. When she ate of the tree, Eve knew shame and hid herself from the presence of the Lord. But there will be no hiding in the garden any more. The betrayal. Her door is closed. I knock, hoping Grace will answer, hoping it was all a lie. But when I push it open, there is no one inside. Just an empty bed and stripped mattress. There is nothing left of her. The shelves are cleared. Even the scent of her has fled. No trace of her on the pillow or the blanket that has been neatly folded on the bed. I lie down on it, in the spot where she lay every night. So many times I thought about climbing in beside her. But now it is just me. She is gone. I could step out of the front door and start walking. But in which direction would I head? I have nowhere to go. No idea where she is. I'm afraid she left no message for you, Emily says. I look up to see her watching me from the doorway. It must be quite a shock. I know how close you two were. She told me all about it before she left. She sits down beside me on the bed, making herself comfortable. She is not going to rush this opportunity to toy with me. Aren't you going to ask what happened? She says. I'm not. I won't give her the satisfaction, though every part of me is desperate to. I discovered that she wasn't honest in her commitment to God, she says. She had started to question things. She thought she knew better. And it came to my attention that she had gone behind Octavia's back. She was conspiring, undermining her. What? How? I couldn't help myself. Oh, Dilys, your confusion is wearing a little thin. You are not as fragile as you pretend to be. I have seen you two whispering together, sneaking off into corners, into the clock tower. She raises her eyebrow and laughs. I can feel the panic rising from my stomach into my chest, up into my throat. The thought of what she might know, what she might have told Octavia. Where is Grace? I say. She has moved on, Dilys. We have made sure she will be quite comfortable. Where? Octavia and I decided it was best to keep that information confidential. There is no need for anyone within the society to have anything more to do with her. But you'll be going to visit her like you did with Edgar. No, no, that was a special treat reserved for him. I wanted to make sure he was going to leave for good. We won't have any problems with Grace. She was only too happy to go. The poor thing found your feelings for her rather too much. She is laughing at me now, disguising her scorn for me as pity. From what she told me, she had to fight you off. I saw the mark on her cheek. That's right, isn't it, Dilys? You hit her when you were wandering around in your nightclothes. I was sleepwalking. Oh, is that what you were doing? She says. I watched you from the top of the stairs. She took you back to bed. Oh, God. What does she know? I can't help blaming myself, she says. I encouraged Octavia to let Grace join. I thought it would be a good idea to have someone who could look after you. Keep an eye on you. I never imagined you'd end up with your eye on her. Still, she says, I wouldn't have known about Edgar's break in at Castleside if it wasn't for Grace. And she told me a great many things about you, Dillis. I feel I know you much better than I did before. This isn't true. None of it is true. Emily is twisting everything. Grace wouldn't do that. I don't believe it. I won't. I have faith in her. And faith can be enough. Sometimes it has to be. But what if Grace was telling my secrets? Spying on me all along. I thought that Kate had told Octavia about the window, but I never found out. I never asked her. Everything is unravelling. Snag one stitch and the whole line is tugged out behind it. Poor Dillis, Emily says. She has left you. She pats my leg and I knock her hand away. It feels good. I have shocked her. I have shocked myself. And I want to do it again. I want to lash out. I want to hurt her. Spill her blood, grab her hair and smash her face into the wall. But once I start, I might not be able to stop. It's been a shock, she says. But try to calm down. I have decided not to worry Octavia with the details, but if you leave me no choice... I'm going to be sick. I run out of Grace's room to the lavatory. There is no food to come up. No, my body is trying to rid itself of Grace, purging the memories that I have collected. The butterflies that have danced inside me since the day she first came. She has left you. With every wretch I delve deeper, but I can't let go of them. I push my fingers down my throat to try to force them out. I can feel the burn of separation as they shoot into my chest. I taste their bitterness. But I can't let her go. I think you better lie down, Emily says from behind me. She was a dangerous influence, Dillis. She takes my arm and leads me across the landing to my bedroom, and I haven't got the energy to resist. What's the use in fighting now? We are better off without her, she says. Settle down now. She pulls back the covers and I climb in with my clothes and shoes still on. I'll get you a drink. She picks up the glass by my bed and walks back to the bathroom where I can hear her filling the glass. When she returns, there is a square of linen swirling around in the water, as though she has stirred it. Here, this will make you feel better, she says. I want it to wash the taste away, but it doesn't. The water itself seems to have taken on a bitter flavour. It feels gritty in my throat as I swallow. That's right, drink it all up, Emily says. When the glass is empty, she takes it from my hands and walks to the door. A nice long sleep, she says. And when you wake up, let's hope you have a little more perspective on what's important. I hear the key turn in the lock and I am trapped again. Thoughts crawling inside my head. I can feel them clamouring over each other. A mass of sticky wings and knotted legs. I wish I could open up my skull and let them out. I'd take a knife to it myself if I thought I could make them stop. Was it all a lie? Did she ever care for me at all? Perhaps she stepped into the sitting room to make her confession to Octavia. Perhaps she was whispering my secrets to Emily that day in the kitchen. I climb out of bed and look out of the window. I watch the washing blowing on the line. Wash me and I shall be whiter than snow. I thought the Lord had sent her to me. It seemed so clear. But now I can't make sense of it. My thoughts won't stay still. They are dancing like my nightdress in the breeze. I remember that night. Her scent, her heat, her breath. The taste of cotton. She wanted me to find every part of her. But there's another memory. We can't, we mustn't. We are just friends, Dillis. The best of friends. In my dream, she begged me to kiss her. In my dream, she begged me to stop. And I'm too tired to know what was real and what was not. I climb back into bed and I try to stay awake. I need to think. I need to understand.
Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone that loveth is born of God and knoweth God. Emily said that it was sinful and unnatural. Is that what Grace thought too? Dillis, she said, if this is how it is going to be, I just don't think I can stay here. And now she is gone. I can't make sense of it. I can't stay awake. That must be why it's called falling asleep, because once it takes hold, you are powerless to stop it. It's inevitable. Irresistible. You fall when it comes to sleep. And when it comes to love. I can't keep my eyes open. When they close, the lids burn red like the tip of a cigarette.
The truth. I am alone, in bed. I still have my shoes on.
I can feel fingers creeping across my skin, cold like Ellen's, and a hand around my throat again. I can't move. Heavy with grief, choked with sorrow. I don't know how long I've been asleep for, or what time it is, or what day. How long has she been gone? I managed to climb out of bed. My legs are heavy, they feel as if they don't belong to me. The door is still locked. I can't get out. There's no chance of leaving now. Did Grace tell them that too? Did she tell them that I planned to go with her? I hear footsteps on the stairs and I stumble back to bed. Whoever it is on the other side of the door knocks softly, turns the key in the lock and walks in. Miss, are you awake? Betty whispers. I close my eyes and pretend I am asleep, dead to the world. Miss, you are wanted downstairs. There's a telegram arrived. Emily says it's important. It might be news of Grace. A telegram from who? I say, startling Betty by sitting up in bed. I don't know, but it's caused quite a shock. I think you ought to come. At least it will get me out of this room. Betty, do you know what happened to Grace? Where she's gone? I'm afraid I don't know, miss. I haven't seen her. But you know about Ellen's funeral? I nod. About time, she says. It wasn't natural what they did, trying to keep her body warm like that. But you stayed with her, Miss Baltrop, all them days. You looked after her. I came to see you. Do you remember? I brought you food. You wouldn't leave her aside. She uses the corner of her apron to wipe tears from her face. I know you took it hard. Are you feeling better? I'm not sure. It's been a lot to take in, she says. It has. But I shall look after you now. I'm here, I've moved back into my old room, so everything's back to how it used to be. How it used to be before Grace came. Miss, she says, they are waiting on you downstairs. Yes. The telegram. I'm only halfway down the stairs when I hear raised voices. Emily, Octavia and Peter are gathered around the table in the sitting room. Octavia has her head in her hands.
Dillis, we've had word, she says, looking up as I enter. From America.
Her voice is shaking and so are her hands.
You'd better come and sit down, Emily says. I thought you should hear it before we make the announcement in chapel tonight. After all, you were involved.
Octavia, I say, taking a seat between her and Emily. What is it?
It has happened, she says. The prophecy has been fulfilled.
She slides a piece of paper across the table to me, marked Western Union. Edgar Pysart taken ill on crossing to New York. Treated in hospital on arrival. Died 2 days later. Cause unknown. But how did they know where to send it?
Octavia paid for his ticket, Emily says, her voice measured and cold. So they traced her as next of kin.
It is just as she said it would be, Octavia says. just as the Divine Mother said. Send the man to New York, he will die. And now he's... Oh, we knew to expect it, but to receive the news so soon. She puts her head into her hands again, rubs her temples and looks up. It's just such a... shock, I say. Emily corrects me. Relief. But when I look in Octavia's face, it is something else I see. Is it fear? It means there can be no doubt now, Octavia says, staring past us all to a picture of the crucifixion on the wall. No doubt that the Lord has sent the Divine Mother to speak through Emily. It is the strangest feeling, Emily says. When the spirit comes to me, I know nothing of what it says. It is just like falling into a deep sleep. But this is proof. Anyone who questioned it can now have no doubt, Octavia says, still staring at the painting. Anyone who questioned it must now be silent, unless they want to be next. You said he'd get what he deserved, I say. Emily looks up as if she has just woken, and something passes between us. An understanding. A secret. A truth. Yes, the Lord made sure of that, she says. We must give reverent thanks that he rid us of the man who sinned so deeply. She smiles at me, victorious. But the world is spinning again. Too quickly. Spinning with questions. What she gave him when she went to visit. What she might have put into the water. If you'll excuse me, I say, rising suddenly from the table, I need to lie down. Grace said she had found out something. I remember now. She was trying to tell me a secret. Is this why she had to go? We don't have long, she said. Read the letter when you wake up. I thought she might have left something under my pillow. Well, that used to be our place, the place where we could hide the words we dared not speak out loud. But there is nothing there. Nothing in the wooden box where I store the notes and letters that I have kept. I tip them out onto the bed and shuffle through. Perhaps if I read them, I will remember. I'll be able to work out what has happened, what I have done and what I should do next. Can a mother forget the baby at her breast and have no compassion for the child she has born? Though she may forget, I will not forget thee. That was when she found out Octavia was my mother. That was when I told her there were no more secrets, which was the biggest lie of all. Among the letters I find her button, the dark blue one, the one that fell off her sleeve that first day when I invited her to visit. I hold it in my hand and squeeze it until tears prick my eyes, but I can't make them fall. I should be sorry that I ever met her, but I can't be, even now. I don't want to let go of her. Even if all I have to hold is pain. Pain and a small blue button. I will not forget you. That's what she said, and I wish I could believe it. But now she is gone, perhaps it is easier for her to forget this place, to forget she ever met me. Just like Adrian has. His letters are here too, but there is nothing new among them, nothing that I haven't read before. Both he and Grace tried to tell me, but I wouldn't listen. I didn't hear until it was too late. I pull out all the clothes from my drawers, but I don't find anything hidden there. I take my books from the shelf and shake each one by the spine. I stand among the mess strewn around my feet and search my mind, but I can't remember what she said. Read it when you wake up. Or did I imagine that too? I have to find it. I have to find something. A sign that Emily was lying, that Grace didn't want to leave. A sign that what we shared was not all in my head. The poor thing found your feelings for her rather too much. I reach for my Bible. And that's where I find it. An envelope addressed to me. It has already been opened.
Inside is a letter from my brother Adrian. Edward Reeves, Esquire, Jessop and Son, 5C Harper Street, Bedford. Dear Miss Baltrop, please do not be alarmed by the headed notepaper on which this letter is typed. I write on behalf of your brother, Adrian, who is most concerned about your situation and anxious for reassurance that you are well. He has instructed me in my capacity as his friend rather than his solicitor. We were chums at school and have kept in touch since, Adrian sharing exotic stories of his life in India and I, in return, writing with news from here in Bedford. I hope you will excuse me for speaking plainly, Miss Baltrop, but he has confided his fear that your mother's so-called religion is not just misguided, but dangerous. Though her notoriety has caused him much personal embarrassment, his only concern is for you, his dear sister, and the effect that confinement among these zealots is having upon your health. Though he writes to you regularly, he receives no replies, and is becoming increasingly worried about your well-being, for since your mother has cut him off, he would not know if some illness or accident befell you. In desperation, he asked me to work as a detective on his behalf and keep a watch on your house. I made no sighting of you for several weeks until I made what I believe to be a positive identification through the window of the empty property castle side. At Adrian's request, I have tried on several occasions to get word to you by shouting messages over the garden wall. I came to 12 Albany Road and insisted on speaking to you or your mother, but was prevented from doing so. This confirmed Adrian's suspicion that there are those within the Panacea Society who are obstructing his attempts to contact you. It is not clear whether you are receiving his letters, or indeed whether you will be given the opportunity to read this one, but Adrian is quite determined to help you and will not give up until he has done so. Miss Baltrop, he urges you to consider going to live with him and his new wife in India. He is quite convinced that away from Bedford you would see the society's beliefs are false. If you are reading this, I must impress upon you the importance of getting word to me at the above address. Any correspondence would be in the strictest confidence, and you have my word that I will assist you in any way I can. Yours sincerely, Edward Reeves, Esquire. Thoughts crash over me. Crests high enough to knock me off my feet. Between each one I grab a breath, and then I am submerged again. The voices, the faces, they were never in my head. The man I saw at the window in Castleside, the reporter at the door. Was he a reporter at all, or did Adrian send him too? I heard him call my name, and then Emily said I should stay inside the garden. She said it wasn't safe. But safe for who? She wanted me to think that Adrian had given up on me, but he was trying to get word to me all along. Tears are falling down my face. The fear that I have carried is flowing out of me. I can feel it leaving my body. I am not mad. I say it over and over, and then laughter rises up inside me, just like it did on that first day Grace came to visit the chapel when I felt God's spirit. I cry, and I laugh, and I cannot stop. It was Emily all along. It was Emily's scheming that made me think I was hearing voices. It was always Emily, keeping the truth from me. Is this what Grace found out? Why would she have left me this letter if she didn't want to help me? Guilt, says the voice in my head, because she'd been telling your secrets? Revenge, because Emily forced her to leave? Love, it says, because she loved you? Perhaps she still does. I tuck Adrian's letter back into the envelope, and as I lift the flap, I see something written there. Psalms 35:17, Luke 8:17, Matthew 28:20. I reach for my Bible and look them up one by one. Lord, how long wilt thou look on? Rescue my soul from their destructions, my darling from the lions. For nothing is secret that shall not be made manifest, neither anything hid that shall not be known and come abroad. And lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world. Love, says the voice in my head. She loved you, she still does. I know what I have to do. The exorcism. I have to get out. Let me out of this room! I am shouting, banging on the door, but no one is coming. I open the window. Octavia! Help me! Betty calls up from the garden. I put my leg over the sill as if I am going to jump, and they come running. Emily unlocks the door and Octavia pulls me back from the brink. Octavia! Emily, help me! There's a devil here! Don't leave me locked in with him! I need to get out! I struggle against Emily, who is holding my arms behind my back. He is there! Do you see him? Octavia, do you see him? I stare at two flowers on the wallpaper and imagine they are eyes. He is watching me, Octavia! He has come for me! She follows my gaze and looks to the same spot, cowering when she sees the face I have described. Dear Lord! She says, Dear Lord, deliver us! I catch a glimpse of myself in the mirror. My hair is wild. There's a smile on my face. His eyes, Octavia, I say. They are red like the coals of hell. It is horrible. Too horrible, she cries out. Emily lets go of my arms and I see her pull the Jerusalem knife from her sleeve. She must carry it with her all the time now. I suppose she never knows when she might be called to cast out a spirit. I am the Divine Mother, she says, stepping forward, not even bothering to fall into a trance. In the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, I banish you. You have no power here. This is the Lord's jurisdiction. She cuts the air with the knife, then lifting it with both hands, she runs at the wall, using the blade to slash the wallpaper. She is cutting the wrong flowers, but I don't point out her mistake. Open the window, she shouts. Octavia is nearest, but she struggles to lift the casement. It is stiff and there is a knack to it. I'll do it, I say. With growls and bared teeth, Emily chases the invisible demon to the open window, then slams the sash shut. Octavia is sobbing. She is swaying on her feet. I take her arm and sit her on the bed. She looks up at me. It is over, Emily says. The Lord has protected us. But it is not over. Not yet. I stand up again, lift the water jug from my washstand, the one decorated with lilies, and throw it at the wall. Dillis! Get them out, I shout. All I can hear is their voices. I am hitting my head now, pulling at my hair. Divine Mother, free me from their control. There are more, Octavia shouts. Help her, hold her down. As they push me onto a chair, I struggle, just enough, so I can be sure they feel the devil in me. And then I go still. I stare at a knot in the floorboards. Emily stands behind me. I am vacant, docile. I am ready. You must confess everything, Emily says. Lay charges against the devil, for he is the one that leads you to sin. I am under the control of demons, I say. They are trying to send me mad. I have heard them calling my name over the garden wall, and I have seen them waiting outside for me in the street. They take the form of ordinary men, but I know they are demons. They whisper to me about Adrian. I look straight up into Octavia's eyes for any sign that she knew, any hint that might give her away, but there is nothing. They tell me that I am mad, that all this is madness. Octavia staggers back as if she is wounded. I try to stand up, but Emily pushes down on my shoulders. I can feel her fingernails digging through the fabric of my dress. Do you wish to be delivered? She says. I do. I want to be free of them. Octavia lifts her hand above my head and says, Then I condemn these failings as being no good, not of God. What else do you confess? Desires, I say. Feelings of love. Feelings that were consummated. We lay together. I broke my vow to Jesus.
Your vow of celibacy. Oh, dear Lord, who is he?
Grace.
Grace?
We made love.
As I say it, I am smiling at the memory. Smiling as I snatch my secret out of Emily's hands. She can't use the truth against me now. She can't expose me if I have nothing to hide. For nothing is secret that shall not be made manifest.
She lies! Emily shouts. Grace would have told me. She confessed everything. I would have known.
No, Emily. Only Grace knows the truth. Only Grace knows what happened the night she took me back to bed, the day we were locked inside the opening room. She didn't tell anyone what we did. Not even me. But I have dreams and memories and lines of scripture written on notes inside my Bible. And I know that she loved me. That is our truth, whatever I may tell them now.
It was the devil's work, I say. He seduced me with ecstasy. With rapture.
Octavia lurches forward and I open my eyes. She has grabbed the knife from Emily and is pointing the tip towards my face. Her hand is shaking.
I touched her,
I whisper, dropping my head and pushing my hands between my knees. We lay together in Castleside, on the table where the bishops will gather. Octavia steps back suddenly and sits down on the bed.
My own daughter,
Emily says.
That's why Satan has tempted her, to hurt you. Stand up, Octavia. I'll ask again, Dilys, do you wish to be delivered?
Yes.
Then, Octavia, you must condemn her sin. Octavia!
I do, she says softly.
I condemn it all. No good. Not of God.
She is still sitting on the bed. She looks exhausted. Defeated.
But there's something else I need to confess, I say.
Again, Emily tells Octavia to stand up, and this time she obeys, handing the knife back when she reaches the chair.
Murderous thoughts, I say, dropping my voice to a whisper. I have thought about hurting Emily. Of pushing her down the stairs.
Now I'm the one taking my time. I'm going to enjoy this.
The devil told me I should creep into her room while she slept.
I lift my hand in front of my face and study my fingers. Take her neck and squeeze it. Or take a poker from the fire and cave in her head.
Oh, dear God, Octavia says. He is trying to get you to do his work.
He has made me hate her, I snarl, rolling each delicious word around my mouth before spitting it at her.
I despise her.
Octavia brings her hand to her mouth and backs away.
She is possessed, she says. She is lost. He has got her.
Not yet, Emily says.
Do you wish to be delivered?
I turned round to her and smile.
I do,
I whisper. Emily calls.